Hello, I'm Toby Fox from 1.5 Million New Homes, the Local Government Challenge, sponsored by Redloft and by Waits. So the mission is to get 1.5 million new homes built, and the key delivery arm for that mission is local government, either as the planning authority or as a joint venture partner or directly delivering new homes. So I've been visiting a different council every month to understand what works and what needs to change to help councils get more homes built. This month, we've been embarking in Dagenham, visiting the council there in East London and its wholly owned development company, BeFirst. Since recording these episodes, a lot has happened at BeFirst. So I spent some time with the leader of the council, Councillor Dominic Toomey, and with the newly appointed interim managing director at BeFirst, Caroline Harper, as well as with Paul Nichols, the Managing Director for London at one of BeFirst's development partners, Waits, to understand their takes on the changes at BeFirst. Caroline Harper, hello. We made an episode about building your career as Deputy Managing Director at BeFirst, in which you talked about one of the toughest parts of your job being that you have a lot of bosses. So since making that episode, you've become Interim Managing Director at BeFirst. So is your job actually easier now? Have you got fewer bosses? What's actually changed?
Is my job easier, if only? Yeah, so you're right. Since we last spoke, my role's changed. So I'm now Interim MD for BeFirst. Very exciting. And with that, I've taken on responsibility for really kind of fast tracking and expediting the next phase. And we'll talk about that in the context of our conversation. And what that's meant is we've seen the resignation of the previous MD, Jeff Raw, and also the resignation of the previous board, with a new board put in place, chaired by Jeremy Grint, who, you know, very established individual and really kind of knowledgeable about Barking Dagenham, having worked at the council, and is also the chair for Reside, the council's housing management company, and for Barking Riverside. And with him, we've got two council officers. So one, Nigel Pickup, really interesting background in that he's, you know, lots of experience working for the likes of like CBRE Investors. He was involved in TfL setting up their own kind of property company. And then the other member of the board is Jehenga Manan, who works in the council's finance. So brings with him, and, you know, also has worked 60 Bricks and so on. So very relevant experience for what we need to do for BeFirst Phase 2. And it's an exciting new chapter.
And 60 Bricks, that was the housing company that was run by Waltham Forest.
Yes.
Yeah. Council. Yeah. So there's a qualitative change to that board, isn't there, which really stands out, which is that all of those people, and I remember working with Jeremy when he was running regeneration in Barking Dagenham before BeFirst was even set up. All of those people are very closely linked to the council. Whereas previously, one of the things that set BeFirst apart was that the board was very autonomous from the council. And that was the leader, Dominic Toohey, has talked about how that autonomy was so important to what BeFirst could deliver. So what do you think that qualitative change to the board, what impact is that going to have on BeFirst?
Well, I think it's worth bearing in mind that obviously a board for a company has responsibilities to the company. These people are not put in as the council, but one of the drivers and shifts behind the switch is really making sure that you know, that firm commitment to accelerating regeneration in the borough, the kind of the big picture longer term vision of what we're trying to achieve is still very much there, but we need to kind of, circumstances have changed, so we need to knit what we do into BeFirst much more strongly into the council's objectives. And the council's undergoing, you know, quite a lot of change that we'll see this year, a new inclusive growth strategy, for example, and we need to make sure that we are speaking to that in terms of what we do about development. And with it, we are going to have greater responsibility for overseeing the council's asset portfolio. And really kind of, I mean, I think about it in terms of how do we make those assets sweat, which is not just on a financial basis. There's also the social value side of it. And we've, you know, our history, our 7 years of existing already, we've had quite a lot of oversight of certain areas of their asset portfolio, but what we haven't had is that kind of broader, you know, there's various assets that sits in various parts of the council, and we need to bring those together and really like have a really kind of comprehensive asset management strategy to assist the council in putting itself on a firmer kind of, well, they're taking a balanced budget to cabinet next week, so they're on pretty good grounds, particularly comparatively to other councils. But it's helping them with that kind of firmer financial footing with their assets in a stronger way than we've done already. Plus also, of course, you know, and there's been lots in the press, and I've spoken about it already over the last couple of weeks, is it's really kind of accelerating that kind of public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And I think the experience of the people on the board will really help with that. But we've got to do it in such a way. And again, this is, you know, echoes of what we've always been about. And when I say we, I mean BFIRST and the council, is regeneration that works for the borough. And I think that's one of our strengths, is, you know, we've collectively kind of really driven what's happened in the borough regeneration wise rather than letting things happen to us. And this is a kind of marker in the sand for, right, the world has changed, the council's position has changed, we need to change and adapt to that in order to carry on going forwards and have continue a success story, really.
Can we just try and quantify how much the world has changed? So what's actually happened with the great delivery programme in Barking and Dagenham? Can you quantify the kind of the level of, I don't know, it's been described as a pause, you know, delivery has paused.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't quite paused in that we've still got a delivery programme for homes. You know, this year we'll deliver about 750 homes. There is a similar amount of homes to be delivered next year. But it's what happens after 2026 and that pipeline and bringing forward, because the council owns a lot of land, and I can talk about the sort of different areas that it does. But the original business model was very much about direct delivery and the council having access to cheap debt. It doesn't have the same ability to borrow going forwards. So we've got to look at, well, how do we diversify what we do? Who can we work with that can bring in that investment to ensure that pipeline of delivery? And some of that, you know, well, a lot of that is driven by the macroeconomics. You know, we all know that councils have got really difficult situations, and, you know, certain elements of what they do have really exacerbated over the last few years in social care, for example, and the pressures that that brings. But I think we would also be having this similar conversation anyway, just because of the sheer scale of what's possible in Barking and Dagenham. And it's just not realistic for a council to, or any one company, to deliver everything that's possible by itself. So at some point, this diversification was needed, and is very much a part of, I see it very much as a part of BFIRST maturing. And able to continue and evolve and adapt to circumstances. So there is still a delivery pipeline, but like I say, it's what's next after that. How do we bring forward, you know, the next estate renewal projects? How do we bring forward the next phases of Thames Road on our key transformation areas? And we're not going to be able to do that by ourselves.
We've talked about this in other episodes, but for this episode, Carol, give us an idea of that, the scale that's at stake here. Like, what could you build, all other things being equal?
Yeah, I'll take a step back first, because I think one of our strengths is we've got this kind of longer term vision of what we're trying to achieve. And the way I try and articulate it is, what does Barking and Dagenham look like in 2040? And therefore, you know, what are the milestones in order to get us there? And, you know, you can talk about that in general terms. So, of course, we want it a place where homes and jobs and just general life are thriving. But with that, it's not just about homes. So, you know, we've submitted a South Barking Newtown proposal, for example, which is an initial, and I say initial because there is, you know, there's more that we could have added into that, but initially identifying scope for 48,000 homes. So really significant. But also importantly with that is we've got to anchor that around employment and skills. And again, we've got the kind of the big wow to be able to do that. So an example of that is Box Lane, the rail freight terminal. Yeah. Legal and General is expecting that to be operational from 2026. We've got to, you know, look at that in what does that bring in terms of what does it mean for the strategic industrial land around it, which at the moment is not really operating where it should. So, again, this is an opportunity to have real impact locally for jobs, with the homes alongside it and making Barking and Dagenham a real kind of sustainable place that is a place in and of itself. We don't want to be a dormitory. We want more than that. And I think that's right when you look at where Barking and Dagenham is on the map. You know, it's very easy to get into central London, like Barking Town Centre to Fenchurch Street is 15 minutes. But we are, at the same time, I think we have to recognise that we are an outer London borough. So if we're going, you know, London's moving east, yes, but we can't just have London's moving east and its homes for the rest of London for people to then go elsewhere. Yeah. It's got to have more to it. Because otherwise, I think, as you know, a building environment kind of person, we're not leaving a good legacy.
It's got to be more than like a dormitory town.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's got to be more than that. So I think one of our USPs is very much the scale of what's possible here. And we're concentrating and have been concentrating on really kind of giving profile to the South Barking, which in London plan terms is a big part of the London Riverside Opportunity Area. But there's more beyond that. You know, you've got the Beckentry Estate, which takes up a third of the borough, 29,000 homes, 100 years old. Real scope for what do we do about retrofit there? How do we solve some of the challenges that the council owns about two thirds of those homes? What do we do there? If we go up to Chadwell Heath on the Elizabeth line, there's kind of industrial land there. Is it in the right location? Probably not in terms of accessibility. But again, there's scope there for how does that work with adjacent Marksgate, which is a big estate? How does it go over to the boundaries with Redbridge and so on? So, yes, we're concentrating on South Barking because there's lots of potential there. But you can see how actually if you move up the borough further north, there are further opportunities to bring forward. And we should, given the challenges we've got both in terms of people's everyday lives, health, you know, where are they working and so on, but also what does this mean for London and by association, what does it mean for the UK, given London's importance, then we've got a real responsibility for delivering in the right way in this part of the borough, and BeFirst and the council want to be very much driving and shaping that.
So you'd be striving and shaping that, but you won't be delivering it directly. You'll be delivering it with partners. And your role as an organisation at BeFirst is to go out and find those partners and have those conversations with investors. So what do you want from the market, Caroline? What are you looking for from developers, from investors? Who do you want to talk to? What do you want to talk to them about?
Yeah, sure. And I think that it's an interesting one because, you know, we're not starting from zero here. I've had a lot of conversations with potential partners over the past kind of 18 months or so, and that's been really useful in terms of helping us shape what our offer is. I'm really open to further conversations of that nature, but I'm also very conscious that we've got to do more than chat. We've got to have substance behind it. And one of the things I'll be doing, you know, rapidly over the next few months with my team is kind of really kind of pinning down what are our offers and what's the substance behind it. So where are those sites? Now, I've been thinking about it in terms of we're going for gold, but we've also got a silver and a bronze track. So, you know, what's possible in terms of and how quickly can we do things. But this picking up on some of the things that we were working on already. So we've been calling it an investment partnership where we package up some of the estate renewal project sites that are owned by the council and bringing those forward. And I'm kind of envisaging that we need to, identify one or two that we can get out there in the market and really specifically target interested parties. We've got Thames Road, which is in the council's commercial portfolio. We're doing a lot of work with MHCLG as part of the comprehensive spending review to bring that forward. But again, that's a different type of investor appeal. So I think in terms of asking, if someone's listening to this thinking, well, I want to be involved in that, great. Definitely get in touch, but also bear with me while I fine tune and my team and I fine tune what actually we're offering so that we make those conversations as meaningful as possible going forwards. Because, I don't want to be in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months looking back and thinking we're still having these conversations. I've got to get delivery underway and I've got to get things across the line. I would like to get at least one site out in the market, by the summer so that we've got something that we're working through. I mean, these things won't happen quite as neat and tidily as that, because we've got ongoing conversations with potential partners for Thames Road, for example. So I can't give you kind of, all right, and by the 15th of June, it will be here are 10 sites. But definitely by the summer, I want at least one site out there that we can test with others to follow, and a bit clearer on exactly what that program will be.
Well, that's really clear. Your interim managing director, why interim? What's that process?
The interim is part of the vote of confidence for the council for BeFirst. And, you know, it is a big change in the sense of people leaving the company. And I think it would be remiss of BeFirst and the council not to want to have some element of consistency going forwards. And that consistency is me. I've been at BeFirst pretty much since the start, you know, and have obviously my career has grown since the start. So kind of proved my mettle, if you like. This is a step up. I'm not underestimating that, but it's one I'm definitely up for and consider myself capable of achieving where we need to go. So the interim side of things is, you know, it means that we don't need to go through, let's appoint someone else, let's have another change, recognizing that the world is in something of a bit of a pivotal place, isn't it? And there's lots happening. And rather than kind of delay seizing those opportunities, we need to be out there and in it. And I'm the face for that to drive it forward.
Caroline Harper, thank you very much indeed for your contribution to getting 1.5 million new homes built. And best of luck in the new role.
Thanks very much, Toby. I really appreciate it.